Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
And welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two here on Sports Daily. We'll be discussing what the Chiefs can do at wide receiver. Real quick, though, this just coming in during our break. Sad news in the basketball world. Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo has died at the age of 58 due to brain cancer. I did not realize he was sick, was not well. That was a pretty big shocker to me. We were literally just talking about him yesterday at my kids' soccer game. And I bring this up because it's one of the reasons I love Dikembe Mutombo. We were talking about one of the second grade goalies and how the parents were training her to make stops. And like they were using the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag as a way to like hype her up and get her attitude going, you know, not in my house. I love Dikembe Mutombo, Tommy. He's always been one of my favorite players. I think he was such an interesting basketball player and character on and off the court. Brought, and I mean this like genuinely, like that dude loved basketball and he loved life, and you could see it and feel it. And I always love that about him. I'm really, really bummed out by this.
Yeah, it's really sad. And like you, I didn't know that he was sick either. And he had really been able to, you know, take that finger wag and everything that you know about him and the character that he played and continue that after his retirement. You saw that in commercials on TV. And really, there are few athletes that, you know, are able to maintain or even grow that popularity after their playing career is done. And Mutombo was definitely one of those guys. And even just talking about his accomplishments on the court, like, I'm trying to think, has there been a better shot blocker in the history of the NBA than Dikembe Mutombo? I'm not sure. I mean, he's at the very least probably top three.
Theo Ratliff was really good there. But no,
yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, I think some people view Wemby as getting to that spot potentially. But for my money, no. And not even that. I don't know that I remember a better defensive player, period. Like, Mutombo was a rock star. Man, he won Defensive Player of the Year four times.
You know, there's only one player that has more blocks in his entire career than Mutombo, and that's Hakeem Olajuwon. And so Olajuwon's number one, Mutombo's number two, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar number three. So, you know, you're in pretty good company there when you are with Olajuwon and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So, you know, definitely sad news for Mutombo, and just was somebody that had a lot of fun on the court. You could tell that when he went out and played. He was in an era of players, like really great, iconic dream team players in the NBA. And so I'm not sure that he gets the praise or the attention that some of those other guys in that era do. But he was a phenomenal player, phenomenal shot blocker, and a great character.
Really sad for Dikembe Mutombo, but just wanted to get that in because that just came down. All right, we'll transition, and it's never easy to transition there into something else, but we will. We'll talk a little more Chiefs here in this hour. We'll be getting into what happened against TCU for KU. That's coming as well in this hour, and probably a little more on the Royals as we make our way through. This portion of the program, by the way, brought to you by Crestview Country Club. The weather continues to be great out there for some golf. It looks like as I drive by and everybody's kind of watching football and chasing their kids, plenty of tee times. They got 36 holes you can play. Tommy and I, both members out there, haven't been able to play a lot of golf here lately, but we're going to try down the home stretch. And you should get out there and check it out. Tell them we sent you. They'll give you a tour of the facility and you can see why we like it so much. All kinds of different membership packages. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs here, Tommy, and what they do moving forward. We're all really impressed with what they've done so far, but it's all about a Super Bowl this year, and you don't really care about anything else. I don't, you don't, the Chiefs don't, the players don't, the coaches don't. Everybody is concerned about winning a third Super Bowl. I think the question you have to ask yourself right now is this roster capable of doing that? I would still say yes, but I think it's dicey. So then the question becomes, how do you make the roster better, right? And I think that's a really interesting question. And I see all the names floating around that people want them to trade. And you know, oh, go get Amari Cooper and go get Deontay Johnson and like these names that I think would be great fits. But I'm like, guys, it's week four. These teams aren't waving the white flag in week four. Like, I don't even know. I don't know that there's any team in football that are willing to give up on their season and trade a star player right now. I mean, how could you do that? How could you sell that to your locker room? How could you sell that to your coaching staff? So if they make a trade, I don't think it's happening for a while, Tommy. I don't think there's a trade they're going to make going into week five of the NFL season.
Yeah, unless you're a team like the Panthers that, you know, you've already swapped out your quarterback and, you know, you might want to try to move a wide receiver or two. The Panthers did that before, by the way. Remember, they unloaded Christian McCaffrey when they let go of Matt Rhule a couple of years ago. That was pretty early in the season when they made that change. I've seen rumors that Doug Peterson could be the first coach fired in the NFL this year. The Jags are not good, and so that could be a team that if something like that happens, that you could look at maybe like a Christian Kirk or somebody.
He's pretty expensive. I don't know if they can afford him, but I think he just got a big contract.
Let me be kind of the downer, the Debbie Downer here real quick. The Chiefs are not trading for anybody. I can tell you that right now. As great as it would be to bring in Amari Cooper or Deontay Johnson or whoever, any of these names that are out there right now, I would be absolutely shocked if they made any kind of acquisition. The reason for that is because, like, I was even trying to think about this last night, who have been players, you know, especially wide receivers, that in the Brett Veach era they have traded for or they have acquired and they brought in midseason. The only one that I could really come up with, and maybe there are others, but the only one I could come up with was Kadarius Toney. And that was really exciting at the time when they brought him in because of his upside and his potential. But remember, even that year in that regular season, the first year that he was in Kansas City, he contributed a little bit, but it took a while to get up to speed. And that's why, number one, I don't think it's Brett Veach's style to go out and try to acquire somebody midseason like that. They had to go and sign Kareem Hunt to the practice squad because they didn't have a choice. Like, they didn't have running backs on the roster. They needed to go get somebody. There are enough wide receivers either on the roster or the practice squad right now that I think that Andy Reid and Brett Veach are going to try to roll with what they've got. And also remember the cap room situation. Like, they only have a couple of million dollars. I think it's around $4 million in cap space right now. And so while they could, in theory, go out, I saw the numbers last night that Amari Cooper only has a $1.2 million base salary. So you could afford to bring him in. He could fit in that yeah. cap room. That's not, I don't think, the MO that we typically see from Brett Veach and the Chiefs. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, and why would the Browns do it? Right? Like, why would the Browns make that trade right now in week four? If they're going to make a trade, it'll come, you know, probably later in the season. And at that point, you're hoping a player can get in and get acclimated for the postseason. Here's the interesting dynamic on it, though, for me. Rashi Rice is going to miss this year if it's his ACL. Then he's going to get suspended at some point. You can't get suspended while you're hurt. So we may not see Rashi Rice, Tommy, until 2026, right? And then you have to ask yourself, okay, now there is more incentive, I think, if you're going to go get ultra aggressive to do something. There are a lot of people looking at, oh, Worthy is a first round pick. He's got to step up and be elite now. And guys, Worthy's not going to do that. That's not the player he's going to be this year. He's going to be probably a little bit better version of what we've seen so far. He'll become a better shot play guy. He'll probably command a few more touches, and he's a game breaking type of player. But he's not Rashi Rice. He's not, I'm going to catch 10 balls a game and have 12, 13 targets. He doesn't have the body type for that. He doesn't have the skill set for that. He's a totally different player. That's not what's going to happen. Juju Smith-Schuster is more like that, but he's clearly lost a step, right? So I think when you look at it, like, legitimately, you may not see Rice until either late 25 or at all until 26. Then I think you can begin later this season, because I don't think it's going to happen now, because I don't think a team's going to trade a player that you'd want to become like a big, meaningful. I guess my point is, Tommy, I don't see this as a Band-Aid issue. I see this, if you're going to go give up valuable capital, you don't do it for a short-term fix. You do it for somebody that potentially steps into that role for a long time, because that's what they're going to need. And if you can let that player help you this year and not make that kind of move in the offseason, then all the better. You know, Deontay Johnson is the player that you look at if Carolina, he's the first call I would make is to Carolina to say, what about Deontay Johnson? You got him there. But then Carolina, then who's Andy Dalton going to throw the ball to? They have some young guys. They have Leggett. They have Jonathan Mingo.
I think the question, though, if they call about Deontay Johnson, the question that the Panthers are going to have is, what are you willing to give up? Because this season for the Panthers, while it's been another disaster and they've got obviously major questions to answer at quarterback, what kind of motivation would they have to move on from Deontay Johnson other than stockpile picks? Can we, get capital in place to again continue to try to find a way to rebuild this? And that's the other thing too, is that it's not just the cap space, it's the amount of draft capital that Brett Veach would have to give up to go out and trade for a wide receiver right now. Let's just be real. The Chiefs are in a position of need, and other teams that might be willing to trade a receiver know that. So they can set a premium on these players to force the Chiefs into feeling as desperate as they can to go. And I don't think that's – Brett Veach doesn't play into that. So I just have a hard time thinking that's going to happen. Now, I think what's more likely to happen, and even this I'm not sure is totally likely, but what's more likely to happen is them going and signing somebody that's just sitting out there. Michael Thomas is sitting out there. Will that be impactful? Probably not. But they would be, I think, more likely to go sign a free agent than give up draft capital, which we all know Brett Veach covets that so much each and every year.
I will say, though, he traded draft capital to get Frank Clark. He traded draft capital to get Orlando Brown. Like
mid-season, though?
And those were first-round picks mid-season that he traded.
Well, I know here, that's the difference in all of this, is that the price tag for one of these receivers is going to be higher than if it were in the offseason.
Let me ask it to you this way. Because, yes, he has been willing to trade first-round picks. He's done it at least twice that I just rattled off there. So if you're willing to do that, if you're Brett Veach, if you're willing to do that in the offseason, because Rice is going to miss time into next year, you should at least be willing to do that now too, right? A player like Deontay Johnson's a good example. The difference with him is he's a free agent at the end of the year. He is the caliber of player, though, and the type of player that I would absolutely, if I was Brett Veach, trade a first-round pick for. No question. But you can't guarantee that he'll be here long term. I say that, though. What if there's a way, and he's the only player that's made sense to me because of the team he plays for and the fact that he doesn't factor into their future most likely. What if there's a way that you make that trade and you restructure the contract? And now you take less of the cap hit now, which is what they need. You push that out a little bit and you get him on a longer contract, right? He's not making Justin Jefferson money, but he's going to make really good money because he's a really good player. But he's already 28 years old, which is crazy to think about, but he is a perfect stylistic fit for what they need right now. I think there would absolutely be the justification to trade a first round pick for a guy like that. Now, I wouldn't go and trade like four first round picks for him. But if it was as simple as it, let me give you a hypothetical.
Yes, Jacob.
My watch is interested in this. Let me give you a hypothetical. The Panthers say, just give me your first next year, which I don't think that would be enough. But let's say it is. Your first next year. If I'm Brett Veach and I can do that in a sort of like sign and trade, I do that deal, no questions asked. Absolutely, I would make that trade. Now, I think the Panthers would ask for more than that. I think they should ask for more than that. And I would need to know that I can get him for more than just the rest of this season if I'm going to trade a first-round pick. So there's a lot that would go into that for Brett Veach to sort through on this, but I do think they can justify being more aggressive now because they've been able to justify it. Frank Clark and Orlando Brown didn't even turn out. They traded first-round picks for both of those guys. Does anybody regret that? I don't think so. And neither one of them were good enough to justify the picks. So if you're – and the Chiefs are willing to do this. They're a good enough drafting team later in the draft that they can. I think absolutely they should entertain ideas like that. Now, again, the problem with doing that in week five, there just aren't that many teams that are going to be willing to do it. And so that's where the challenge comes, I think, for Brett Veach. And probably the earlier in the season you do it, the more expensive the player is.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to ultimately dissuade him from going down that path. I mean, one of my favorite sayings is, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And Brett Veach has shown us time and again who he is. And yeah, he has given up first-round draft picks before, but not in situations like this. Not when his back has been up against a wall. I think some might argue that the Orlando Brown
trade, I think his back was against the wall.
His back was up against the wall, but not from a timing perspective, because that was in the offseason. That was getting ready for another year. It was coming off of a terrible offensive line performance in the Super Bowl against the Buccaneers, where the pressure was on him to get something done. But it wasn't like there was a game the next week that he had to get ready for. It was literally, we've got some time. I got to get something done before the start of the season. And then he ultimately was willing to trade that first round pick. I don't think Brett Veach, with his back up against a wall, you know, and apologies for, you know, this this phrase of having a gun to his head. But I mean, that's kind of like, I don't think he would operate in a position like that with his back up against a wall, with the game like this week, or, you know, games continuing on, to be sort of forced into giving up more than he feels like he should give up. Brett Veach is notorious for being pretty shrewd with the way that he does things. He doesn't work, I would say, quickly. Like, quickly is not the word that I would use to you know, or rash, I guess, in any kind of acquisitions. Or like, he just doesn't do that. He never has. And so I think what's probably most likely, and this is just my opinion on what I think he'll do, not necessarily what he should do, but what I think he'll do, is they'll try to roll with the guys that they have. They might go sign somebody that's out there floating around, but I think that they'll more than likely just roll with who they have, hope it's enough. And then I wouldn't be surprised if they try to acquire somebody in the offseason, if the thought is that they are going to be missing Rashee Rice for a good portion of next season.
Well, they will be, because he'll get suspended. And we'll see, you know, we're already in week four on an ACL. Now, ACL recoveries have started to happen a little quicker than they used to. But even if it's he's ready for the start of next year, then he's got the suspension.
Right.
That will, at that point, almost certainly have happened. So I don't think it's a rash decision at all for the Chiefs to make a big splash trade here. I don't think it's a rash decision, because Patrick Mahomes affords you the luxury of being more aggressive, just like they have in other trades in the past. I don't think they will, though, until at least the bye week, which for them is early in the year. And honestly, while we didn't like that, you know, when it first came out, it maybe gives them a little chance to work it, and it may work to their favor. That's probably when you would see something happen, if it does. I'm with you. I think they roll with what they have, at least for the next 2 weeks. I don't know. Here's what I would suspect. I would suspect exactly what you saw yesterday. A lot of throws to tight ends, a lot of throws to the backs, very few throws to the receivers, and shot plays to Worthy. I think that is the passing game for the foreseeable future. And I do think that they will be on the horn making calls to teams to try. But what I don't want to see them do is, if you're going to go through the trouble of making a trade, like, don't trade a third round pick for a crap receiver, right? Keep the third round pick. If you're going to go make a trade for a receiver, it's got to be for somebody that's going to help you. It's got to be for somebody that's going to make you better, not for somebody that maybe will make you better. Because you can go sign those guys off the scrap heap. Go sign Renfro go sign one of those guys. If you're going to go through the trouble of making a trade, make it a big trade at this point. Because I think with Rice missing part of next year, it's an easy justification. You got to think about somebody that's going to help you next year too. And that's why. And again, I don't know yet if I think that'll happen.
I don't think that we should hold our breath that will happen.
If they come out and fall flat on their face, and I don't think, again, I'm with you. But if they come out and they're totally flat offensively in the passing game, they're going to feel a little bit more desperate. Because I would ask you this question Are the Chiefs the best team in football right now?
No, they're not.
They weren't
the best team in football a year ago, and they won the Super Bowl. You know, so I think that probably has to play into it a little bit as well. They went 11-6 last year with an incredibly pedestrian offense, and ultimately won the Super Bowl. I think that probably plays into it as well. This is the same organization that has ridden Sky Moore to death over the last 3 years. And they continued to do that out of necessity yesterday. He had a big drop that Rashee Rice would have caught. Let's just be honest. Rice would have caught that. They didn't have him. They had to trot Sky Moore out there again. This is a team that has brought back Mecole Hardman on a couple of different occasions. They bring back Justin Watson. It's like they ride with the guys that they know, the guys that they are comfortable with, the guys that Patrick Mahomes is comfortable with, regardless of their upside or overall skill set or what they could do down the road. All the different things that are popping off the screen. You want to look at analytics all day long. You want to look at upside and film and whatever. That's all well and good. They ride with who Mahomes wants to ride with. They ride with the guys that the trust factor is there. Those are the receivers. And so putting all of that into context, I think it's extremely unlikely that we see the Chiefs make any kind of trade with another team.
Not yet. Not yet. I think it's much more possible later. If you're asking me, do the Chiefs make any trade for wide? That's not fair. If I said any addition at wide receiver, yes, I think they'll make an addition at wide receiver. If you're asking me if I think they'll make a trade for a wide receiver at some point this season, I would say I'll put it at a 60% chance that they do.
You're going to go over 50? Really? I'm going to take the opposite of that.
I think it's more likely they do something than nothing. But is it a splash trade, I think, becomes the bigger question. And that I don't really know yet. And like, I think it's too early.
This is a team that, and I'm just throwing this name out because I don't know his actual status and if he's, you know, available or not. But like, this is a team that I think is more likely to go out and sign Nico Remigio back to the practice squad, or Justin Ross, throw him back on the practice.
Absolutely.
Like that's, then go and call the Panthers about Deontay Johnson, or call about Amari Cooper.
Like, I think that's what they're going to do. That is what they're going to do. But then you have to ask yourself, what are the chances either one of those guys are actually meaningful contributors?
But that's not the question.
It is a part of the question, because if they're not, if you don't envision them making an impact, then that increases to me the chances that they'll have to go make a trade.
You know, if they do end up calling the Panthers, and I think he's still with the Panthers, I think they're more likely to bring in Amir Smith-Marset, bring him back to Kansas City, then actually trade for Deontay Johnson. Like, that's the sort of thing. I mean, remember, like, and I guess this is, I remembered Kadarius Toney. I had forgotten, you know, the Chiefs acquired Mecole Hardman to come back from the Jets. And, you know, so it was like there were all of these other, and that was later on in the season last year, there were all of these potential wide receivers that were available and out there, whether to be traded for or to be signed. And the Chiefs brought back Mecole Hardman. Like, they're not going out and getting a high-impact, brand-new receiver who has never played in that system before. I just don't see it happening.
I mean, I think it's close to 50-50. I'm going to be excited. I will endorse, for the right player, a splash trade. I'll endorse it because they're not going to have Rice for part of next year, too. Whether they do it or not, it probably depends on the market as much as it depends on the Chiefs. I think they'll have an appetite for it. But no, I don't think they're going to go be stupid at the deadline. They're 4-0. They don't need to yet. Like, they if they keep winning games this way, which they will, then they're going to be fine. They're going to win ugly. And back to last week, I think they're comfortable winning ugly. As much as we don't like to see it, they're 4-0.
Can I just say one more time? You're going to roll your eyes. Sure would be nice to have Hollywood Brown right about now, but, you know, preseason games, they're important. So, you know, now
Tommy,
you're down Hollywood and you're down
Rashee.
He could
have been hurt on the Rashee. First play of the regular season game. Yeah. Obviously, Rice and Pacheco got hurt in the regular season.
He didn't even get a chance to play in the first regular season game.
And they've had four other injuries that happened in the regular season.
I know. It's unfortunate. Yeah. I think it'd be great to have him.
It would. It sucks that injuries are a part of football. Yeah. It sucks.
Especially in preseason when they don't matter.
Yeah, or the regular season, because they're not playing either way.
Yeah, but those do.
869-1240 is the number to call here on the IHOP hotline. We'll come back. We'll talk KU. Yikes, KU fans. I don't know what to tell you, man, but we'll try next. Don't go away. We're coming right back. Welcome back in, everybody. I'm going to tell you about Pep and Suter Remodeling, supporter of the program now, and we're glad to have Pepin and his team on board with us. Pepin did the remodel at my house over the summer. I've told you that. Did a fantastic job. As good an experience with a contractor, I think, as you'll ever see. Courtesy involved, which is a big deal for us. They have been available for any questions we've had after the fact. They redid our kitchen. They converted dining room into an office. We had things and ideas as he walked us through the process that we wouldn't even thought of. But I say this again, the biggest thing that I would take away is the cost. Pepin Suter's bid came in way under the competition, and they delivered on it, and they could not have been more courteous during the process. In a kitchen remodel, the day of, you know, knockout, the day of whatever that's called, where they come in and they smash everything up, they, that same day, had temporary countertops installed, and we could use our kitchen that night. Demo day, that's what it's called. On demo day, we could use our kitchen that night. They put in a temporary sink after they knocked out our old sink. So give them a call. That's 316-573-6822. Include them in your bidding process on your next home renovation or anything you're doing. 316-573-6822. Or you can go to Pepin, P-E-P-I-N, Suter, S-U-T-E-R.com. All right, Tommy, we come back with a little KU here. Man, oh, man, you were at the game Saturday. I'll defer to you on some of this. I would tell you that this, for the first time this year, did not feel like a game they were better than the competition. I think TCU was better. I would take away that Jalen Daniels is still not good, under 50% completion again. They can run the ball, but now their defense is letting them down the last couple of weeks, and they can't play the way that just lets them be a run-based team when their defense is letting them down. This was the most disappointing loss to me at home, and now it's starting to spiral out of control a little bit.
Are you familiar with the longtime baseball statistician Bill James? Remember him, like the guy that did sabermetrics and all of that? Yeah. So I don't. He's very active on social media, very active on Twitter, and for some reason, and I don't, I wasn't sure of the connection, if there was a connection, but he was like live tweeting the game, and he went in on KU in a variety of different ways, and everybody wants to lay the lion's share of the blame at the feet of Jalen Daniels. And I understand it. I get it. And I know that some may say that I've been nothing but a Jalen Daniels defender from day one and all of that. But even a guy like Bill James, who has made his career in analytics and being able to, you know, understand the way that that sort of thing works, he broke down the way the play calling, at least in the game against TCU, played its way out, where there were so many, I didn't realize this until I went back and thought about it. There were so many first down plays that were called. I mean, these were designed plays that it's not like Jalen Daniels, he was checking out of it or he was audibling and doing something different. These were the plays that were called that were incredibly difficult to complete on first down. You're talking like deep routes and things like that on first down that are just really like low percentage likelihood completion plays, which consistently set the Jayhawks into second and long situations, third and long situations. You know, then they're handing the ball off. They're getting 3 yards there. They're getting 4 yards there, you know, and then ultimately it's, you know, they're punting or they're whatever, that they don't continue their drive. And so that's been the way that it's been basically all year long, where I think I've said it before. Yeah, Jalen Daniels has not played to the level that we've expected him to play, but he certainly is getting zero help from the sidelines. And that's been everybody that was around me in this game, at this game at Arrowhead. Yeah, there was frustration on a couple of the throws that Daniels played. I know he had an interception. Take that off the board because that was garbage time. Like it was like a, you know, at the very end right. of the game type
it's
thing.
It's the completion percentage.
The completion percentage is rough, but also the way that those plays were called and the specific plays that they were did not do him any favors. And so I think that that has to be baked into it because you can just look at the completion percentage on its own and say, yeah, it's not good. And it's not. There were a couple of throws that I saw one in particular where he kind of had to move around in the pocket a little bit, was flushed out, ran to his right, threw off of his back foot, and the ball skipped to the receiver. And it wasn't like crisp. It wasn't sharp. It wasn't a pass that you would like to see from Jalen Daniels or anybody. So I believe that, and I'm bought into that he has definitely regressed, but he's not being put in good situations either. And this has been the case consistently week in and week out so far this season.
I agree with all of it. I mean, it's a combination problem. I think what frustrated me on Saturday was there seemed to be progress made against West Virginia when it comes to Jalen Daniels. I thought that was by far his best game of the year. And I don't think TCU was close to it. I don't even care what the reason is anymore. It's just not being fixed. One way or the other, it's not being fixed. So I don't know what to say. And now your defense is letting you down. Now your defense has given up 70 points over the last 2 weeks to West Virginia and TCU. What do you think is going to happen when you play K-State, right? Like, what do you think is going to happen when you play some of the good teams in the Big 12? That's what I worry about. What do you think is going to happen when you play Colorado and Kansas State if the defense lets them down? My hopefulness going into even going into this week, even I thought there was still hope, was that the defense would allow them the opportunity to develop a new identity. But if their defense isn't good, this is going to not get any better anytime soon. That's my problem. The Jalen Daniels Grimes combination is not going to work, right? That is a reality, however you want to slice it.
It's an oil and water type relationship. It ain't going to work.
It is absolutely not going to work. Okay, so let's set that aside for a second. They are still, should be, a great running team and are. They were against TCU, right? Both running backs were good. But if their defense doesn't allow them to feature that, it doesn't really matter.
And you know what? Statistically speaking, the Jayhawks offensive line has been really, really good. I mean, everything tells you that running the football has to be the number one priority, and they need to lean on it heavily, like so much heavier than they even have been. And they just they can't or won't do it. They refuse to do it. Devin Neal and Daniel Hyshaw have been a great tandem. Everybody knows that they're great. You know, they're, and then if you can add in that additional wrinkle of, you know, Jalen Daniels every once in a while taking off, that should allow you to move the ball basically at will. And especially knowing how great that offensive line has been. It's not just Jalen Daniels also, because I know I've said this before in regards to the play calling, but it's more than that too. Anybody want to pay attention to the number of balls that Quentin Skinner and Lawrence Arnold have dropped this year? Like, there have been a couple. Like, there was one on Saturday that I know specifically was Skinner that was in his breadbasket, and he just dropped it. Like, that's happened a lot. It's basically been Jalen Daniels and Luke Grimm. That's been the connection, and that's it. The guys that had been so reliable a season ago have not been and if you're a quarterback that is struggling with his mechanics or trying to come back and shake the rust off, you've got to lean on the reliable guys to catch the ball to help you feel a little bit better about your game. And he's not really getting that at all.
It doesn't matter to me anymore. It doesn't matter. Again, Jalen Daniels and Grimes are not going to work. They're not going to all of a sudden be a great passing team this year. Not going to happen. Their only hope is to be a great running team. They can't do that if their defense isn't good.
Yeah.
They can't.
And the defense, the tackling has been abysmal the last couple of weeks. I was impressed with the defense when they played UNLV. The defense was the only thing that kept them in the game.
I mean,
the West Virginia game, they fell apart towards the end and let West Virginia come back and win the
game. That wasn't a good game.
Wasn't a good game.
Through the first 3 weeks, it was a great defense.
Through non-conference, it was really good. And, you know, going back to what you said at the very beginning, that you felt like this was the first week that the Jayhawks were not as good as their competition, you're absolutely right. That was the first time I felt like, TCU is better than Kansas is. They're executing better. They're playing better. They're doing everything better right now than the Jayhawks are. Lance Leipold, and I want to touch on him for just a second because there's been so much blame thrown around, and really – for a head coach, very little of it has actually gone at the feet of Lance Leipold himself.
I think people are scared to do that.
He deserves a little bit of it, though. Let's be honest.
He made the wrong hire at offensive coordinator.
That Jeff Grimes hire has not worked. By the way, whatever team, I think, is it Purdue? Whatever team hired Graham Harrell as their offensive coordinator fired Graham Harrell yesterday. So it can be done even this early on in the season. Lance Leipold needs to plant his flag in the ground and say enough is enough. We need to move on right now, even through five games. Move on from Jeff Grimes. That has to happen. You can't let this continue because it's not working. And on top of that, too, Leipold has done, let's just call it for what it is, a really poor job in managing games this year. The Jayhawks have been really bad in the final 5 minutes of both first halves and second halves this season. And really, that's been, especially in the second half, when the game is on the line. They have not managed the clock well. They have not managed the play calling well. The situational decision-making has not been good as far as play calling, as far as timeout calling, as far as any of that. It's not been good. And that's fixable. You can do that better. And I think that that's one thing that Lance Leipold will probably look in the mirror about himself as we move forward. If you can't change the skill level of the players or keep them from making mistakes on the field, the most you can do from the sideline is change your play caller. If you're not going to be able to put them in a better situation, then do something to put them in a better situation. Change your play caller. Get rid of the guy that you brought in because it's not working with largely the same team that you had a season ago. Those are all things that I think Lance Leipold should do. Will he do them? I'm not sure that he will.
Apathy, my greatest fear, they're real close.
They're building a brand new stadium right now in Lawrence. And so much of it is based on just this optimism, this renewed optimism in the program long term. This has been, a dumpster fire. It's been a disaster of a year for the Jayhawks. And you know what? They announced, I just want to mention this. I was at the game. They mentioned the attendance was somewhere around 48,000. And it looked fine. It looked fine. I mean, honestly, it looked fine. That stadium is so huge. If it doesn't get turned around, I'm scared to see what Arrowhead is going to look like the final couple home games.
This cannot be a only look forward to the K-State game season, but that's where we're headed. And again, and others have pointed this out. The recruiting is, for all the it hasn't been as good as some of the Miles classes. So if the momentum begins to wane this year, what does it mean long term? It just is bleh. Dang, so unfortunate. Maybe they'll turn it around. Defense has got to be better. I don't know what they're gonna do. We'll find. They play this week. They play Arizona State. We'll have more on that game later. We'll talk to Shreya Salata later this week too. See what the team, what the vibe, what everybody's saying. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more Royals. We opened the show with the Royals. Our last full segment, we'll close it with the Royals next on Sports Daily.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Let's give away a little HTO here for you on this Monday. If you want to win some HTO, it's easy. All you gotta do is text the keyword T to the short code 20357. That's TEA. To 20357, you can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Get your chance at a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, or a free iced or hot coffee featuring free rain coffee, all your favorites, plus some exclusives to HTO available. Again, that's T to 20357. Good luck there, everybody. All right, Tommy, real quick on the Royals, and we will dig way into the Royals tomorrow, as we'll have an opportunity before that game. This season as a whole, I think once we've reached this point, we asked this question. We didn't want to publicly do it because we didn't want to jinx anything. Would it have been disappointing if down the stretch there they didn't get to the postseason? I think it would have been disappointing. I don't think it would have been a disappointing season. I think you can wash all of that away now and play totally free and loose, house money feel. There is zero pressure on the Royals at this point. There is almost no case for disappointment now. And I think that's a dangerous thing for the teams that the Royals can play, because I do think that fits their identity a little bit.
I would agree with that overall. I differ a little bit as far as had they not made the playoffs. I think that, yeah, you could probably say that the season was disappointing because you get so close. You are in a position where you're one of the better teams in Major League Baseball for a majority of the season. In September, you collapse and fall out of it. Look at the Twins, for example. The Twins had an epic collapse where, you know,
sure,
just a couple of months prior, they were really, really good and in good position. I think that Twins fans would chalk up this season as a disappointment.
Yes, Twins fans
so
would.
So I think that you can make that same argument for the Royals, but I think that there's a very important distinction. I told you this before, between a disappointing season and a failure of a season. It's not a failure of a season,
no,
but I think you can say it could be a disappointing season had they not made
it. Yeah, it may be a little bit. I think the difference for me is the seasons for 5 years now have been over in May. Like, you've been like, all right, well, the season's over. Now, no matter what happened, we got at least a full run through September out of the Royals this year. And that would have been hard for me to call disappointing, because I think the baseball has been entertaining for a while, which is what we should always hope for with baseball, right? That it entertains us in the summertime when there's not a whole lot else going on. Doesn't matter. Now they're in. We'll see about Vinny Pasquantino. Let's give it. I would call it, Tommy. I'll bet that I'm going to put, here's how optimistic I am. I'm going to say there's an 80% chance we see the Pasquatch in the lineup tomorrow.
I think we do, and it goes back to the number of times that Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kauffman has told us that when the Royals don't have great injury news, they keep it very quiet.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
they're talking about it, and if Vinny Pasquantino is visible, which he has been.
And giggling about it in a celebration.
And J.J. Piccolo is saying over the weekend how great it would be to have him in the lineup. Like, it's more than likely going to happen.
Let's go. We'll have it tomorrow. We're going to come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight when we return.